I got 5G in my arm. All right, welcome back, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Not too bad.
I got that one bad. So I'm recording from a secret location this week, aka the other side of Adam's room.
He's so welcomed. So welcomed.
Yeah, I don't have internet right now, but we're going to make the podcast happen. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about, so let's go ahead and get started. First off, we've got a little bit of follow-up. The FCC launched an official speed test app for broadband data collection. Previously, we had talked about how they had wanted to ask consumers directly, you know, what their speed was because they were no longer trusting the ISPs to give the FCC that data. And now, to help that effort, they've launched this app. I believe it's on iOS and Android. It's live on the App Store. Doesn't say whether or not it is on Android. But maybe we'll follow up and check on that. But yeah, at least right now it's on the App Store. And so you can download that. And it's a quick and easy way to get your speed. And I guess it... Yes, the app also sends results to the FCC. So if you want to let the FCC know exactly, you know, whether you're getting what your ISP says you're supposed to be getting, download this app and check it out and send it to the ISP. I know after my ISP installs my new internet tomorrow, I'm going to download this, and you better believe I'm going to let the FCC know whether or not I'm getting what I'm supposed to be paying for.
Yeah, it's a good change. I think they needed to put something out this for a good standard instead of just saying speedtest.com or Spectrum's speed test. And those really aren't the greatest sometimes, depending on what depots you're hitting.
I think the great thing about it is that they automatically report it to the FCC. So that way, you know, it's one less step you have to do. I know when Ryan had brought up the form before, it was just kind of like an open text field. So there wasn't really a whole lot of direction, and you know, that just makes it harder for people to collect the data and then report it. But yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, so on other follow-up news, we have the Ingenuity from NASA, the helicopter that was supposed to be scheduled for flight April 11th, but they were going through and doing a bunch of the pre-test flights, getting the thing ready to do its first ever flight. And they ran into a couple issues with software, it seems, or maybe some adjustments that they need some software updates for. But they postponed the flight, and they still don't have a date set for getting back out there and doing it. But it's one of their big anticipations of getting this helicopter up and rolling. I'd like to see what they got as far as their photos and such. I think that'd be really neat, especially like a real-time air flight. I think that'd be cool.
Do they have one of those helicopters here that they test these patches on? Because imagine like being the software developer that has to write a patch for something that's millions of miles away and it doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things I was thinking about, was like obviously the distance and then how big of a software package you may ever have to send and how long that takes. And then we all know how that works sometimes with like you know, your bandwidth, you start doing a download or something and you lose packets and it's crapped out. Like, I wonder how bad that is.
So yeah, that's really fascinating. I know there was talking about one of the rover programs for Mars, there was like a documentary that kind of highlighted the fact that, I think it was the Japanese, there was like a Japanese, I think, spacecraft that was taking samples from an asteroid like a couple years ago. And they just the fact that like they have to do these like patches on the fly and that the data connections are so small, they have to just be like 1000% sure that there are no bugs in their software, and they're writing them and with so many constraints, right? So like the testing constraints, because they can't build like to, you know, $20 million helicopters or how, you know, whatever the craft is, because that just doubles their budget. So they'll have, you know, simulations and different like automated tests, I'm sure, on the computers themselves, but I don't think that they have like full blown like duplicates of the crafts to test the software on. But yeah, I mean, it's all just fascinating because they have so many constraints. It would be cool to work on, but I think it would be like something that I would probably get burned out on really quick.
For sure. Yeah, just curious if anyone knew. So yeah, I'd love to see that as like a part of a tour one time, right? Like if you're checking out like Houston or wherever the particular mission control is at the time, like seeing that portion of it too, the software devs. I don't know if they ever do that. I don't think so. I've never heard of them doing that. Yeah, so kind of on the topic of bandwidth and internet and data, a little bit of news from a couple mobile carriers, T-Mobile and Verizon. They have launched their initial like phase of 5G to the home. And so T-Mobile, they're offering, it says, now again, these speeds are all contingent on where you're at.
They're the ideal speeds, right? Like they're their advertised speeds. Maybe not what you're going to get, but this is as fast as you could probably.
Yeah. And these are average. So there's probably some good like spikes and in different areas that you probably get pretty good speed. But T-Mobile is advertising an average of about 100 meg connection. They're definitely seeming to drive home the idea that this is for rural environments, which I think is smart because most cities have a lot more providers that are available to people. And so I get that especially if they're only offering like, you know, a guarantee, quote unquote, of average of 100 meg, most people in the city are getting that for probably even cheaper, depending on where you're at, for the 100 meg. So it looks like that service is going to start around $60 a month, which isn't terrible, especially if you're in a rural setting, which typically is a lot more expensive for a connection of that speed, especially if you have to, you know, help with the build out and that kind of thing.
Which is actually kind of funny because as a T-Mobile customer, I know what it's like to have T-Mobile in a rural setting, and it's not necessarily like a strong connection if you get one.
Yeah.
I mean, just south of where I live, if you go anywhere away from this small downtown like hub, then the connection starts to get real sketchy real fast. Like I won't have it like, you know, a mile down the road, and then a mile away from that, I've got like 3 bars, and then back down to 2, then to 1. So it's interesting that they're going to market this as rural, but that's not really their strong suit in my experience.
Well, and that's where it's kind of interesting too. If they're doing 5G to the house, and this is probably being a little too, I don't know, bougie on this, you should kind of expect what you got when you're in rural, but I wonder what the latency looks like for that. If I'm someone...
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And then the interference, like the noise, how that looks for what you're doing in your house. I don't know. I'm curious. I don't know enough about the 5G technology being hot for a whole house, how that looks.
Yeah. And I mean, you get a separate gateway. So it's not like you're just, here's your phone and then you have to, you know, tether off of it. It's a dedicated box. So I'm assuming that's going to, you know, help some things because it's not just a little small phone antenna that you have. So yeah, I mean, that side's to be seen. They claim it's around 30 million households that are within their range. So we'll have a link to all of that so you can check if it's available in your area. The same with Verizon. So Verizon is launching theirs in 30 cities with an average of 300 meg a second. So they're going triple. They're claiming triple the speed. Of course, their scope is a lot different. Because they are actually in much larger markets to start off with. Like, you're talking Chicago, Cincinnati, Dallas, Denver, Houston, like much larger cities, and really aiming towards, it seems like, being a replacement for like a traditional provider. And they do claim, and this will be seen, this is that they can get up to gigabit speed with their 5G connection. Of course, that's down. Upload speeds are still only average about 50 megaseconds. So it's not fiber.
Which is still faster than a home wired internet upload speed.
Yes, it is. On average. And so, because typically, so like I have Spectrum and it's, I pay for the 400 down and it's like 20 up. So that's like, it's ridiculous. So,
yeah. So, okay. So there's a couple of things I want to talk about that on this that I was kind of thinking, and they relate to the what you just said, Spectrum and the home internet. So I just signed up for their quote unquote gigabit plan, and that's their gigabit plan's under a gigabit. It's 940 megs down. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, you're rounding up here. They call it the gig plan or something. I'm like, oh, okay. And then that's the fastest upload speed that you can get as well. And it's a whopping 35 up. So I'm getting 15 more up than you at that point, Ryan.
Right.
But I mean, Adam and I had talked about this offline previously. And so I think he has a similar point of view, and we'll hear his in a second. But I do not like the way that everybody is, all the cellular carriers are trying to like weasel their way into homes and become like the ISPs for the homes because of data caps. This is my number one issue besides latency, besides anything else. I would be okay with having a wired or wireless connection to the house if they didn't have data caps.
Now
T-Mobile says that they don't have data
caps. Verizon's the same. As of now.
Really?
As of right now, they both say no data caps. But we know how that
okay,
is.
Well, that's good. And they have a history of doing the old bait and switch. But so far, so good. T-Mobile's pretty good about no caps. When they say no caps, they've historically not done that. But 100's just not that great. Now, that said, I just was looking for different internet at home and in another location, a more rural location. And a lot of the ISPs are like the traditional, like cable or phone line ISP providers are switching to having data caps. I think the only one that I know of is Spectrum doesn't have a data cap, but Comcast does on every single one of their plans. And because I was looking at those today, and Comcast has a comparable like gigabit plan. It's like 1200 down or something, which is really good. But then their data cap is at like 1.2 terabytes. And I don't know about you, but I have an Eero, and so I can see my monthly usage. And I'll pull it up while we're talking. If it's working, it might actually. No, never mind. I'm not going to do that. And I looked at it the other day, and I think I had used like 3 terabytes, and it's like two terabytes or more on average every month. I was like, "There's no way," because on Comcast's plan, after you go over the data cap, they charge you $50 for every 10 gigs you go over. Which that's insane. Like if you play games, you download a patch for like Call of Duty and it's like 60 gigs. How much is that going to cost you? 60 times 5, $300?
Well, and that's where like, that's the part that always bugged me on it was because if like I'm someone who likes to reformat my machine every now and then, or maybe I want to swap out my drives and reinstall games. And I like to install a pretty big library. I don't just say, hey, I'm going to install one of these 2 games I like to normally play. I'll go through and download quite a bit, and we all know that a lot of games anymore are 50 to 60 gigs by themselves for their fresh download. And I see that as a big killer, and I think they're I think a lot of these ISPs, I mean, we're talking a little bit more central to us right now with what we got going on, but some of these other ISPs across America, they do data caps and they do have a lot of these common practices on wire. And I think we've been fortunate that we've lucked out on some of it. And I hope that's the continuing trend, but I have the huge fear, just like you, that if we get into these ISPs from cell phone providers doing wireless, we're eventually going to get the bait and switch.
Yeah. I mean, AT&T fiber has data caps unless you pay for their like highest speed. So if you get like one of their middle of the road speeds, you're going to get capped. At, I think either a terabyte and a half. So same thing. AT&T's doing it. So I think you guys are right. I think they're not a traditional ISP, and so it's almost like they don't think like that. They think as a wireless carrier, which has traditionally always been the more you use, the more you're going to pay. When you're at the home, like especially with everyone working from home, school being home, like those data caps are going to get eaten up so quick. It's ridiculous.
Well, at least one thing I can say is some of these bigger ones with cell phone providers, you generally have to set up a contract. I guess it's not the case with all of them, but a lot of them try to do a contract base with you. So you should expect, hey, the 2 or 3 years that I've set my contract, it's going to be this price. And if I locked in with no data cap, it's going to be there until the end of that contract, at least. But some of these other ones that don't do contract base, those are the ones that would scare me. Those are the ones that I'm like, okay, we may be great for a good 3 or 4 months, and that promotion's going to disappear, and then we may be subject to some different charges. I don't know. I mean, we're being kind of cynical in some of it, but at the same time, these are some of the realities of what these businesses behave.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna walk you through a little story here, a little story time with Ryan. So, just to kind of shine the light on how great the customer service is and experience for these ISPs. So, I sign up for Spectrum yesterday, and it's getting installed tomorrow morning, and that's why I'm recording over here at Adams. And I get a phone call earlier today, and it's Spectrum because, you know, the caller ID shows me. And I just assume it's them going to confirm my appointment for the morning. So I answer. And boy, was I surprised, because it was a representative, and she's trying to sell me additional services. She's like, oh, I see, you know, you got our plan. I would like to tell you about some other offers that we've got. And, you know, I told her, I was like, look, I only want the internet that I signed up for. That's why I signed up online and I didn't call them, because I knew it was going to be a huge rigmarole in them just trying to like get me to buy more stuff and more stuff and more stuff. And so I told her, I said, no, I only want what I signed up for. And then she proceeded to ask me what I'm going to use the internet for. And I'm like, okay. So I said, I'm just going to use them for general things. And she goes, oh, but well, you got our highest plan. You got our gig plan. Doesn't sound like you're going to use it for general things. Are you going to be using it for work, remote work, or gaming or streaming? And so at this point, I was really aggravated. I said, all of the above. And I understand that you're trying to sell me something, but I'm not interested. And then she goes, well, how do you know if you're not interested if you haven't heard it? And at that point, I was done. And so I told her, I was like, look, I'm going to hang up now. And I just hung up the phone. And I never heard from her again. But it's these kind of like, I mean, this is pretty much like harassment to call me while I'm working in the middle of a work day and try to sell me something. And then when I tell you no, you keep doing it. And it just really pisses me off. And I'm tired of it. Over the years, ISPs have gotten worse and worse and worse and worse, and they don't want to improve their networks. They're just dragging their feet. And now we're only talking in the United States here, right? If you listen to the podcast somewhere else in the world, you might have other problems. You may have great service. You might have problems worse than ours, but this is the way it is here. And so actually I was thinking about, you know, what we were going to talk about tonight. And how I'm kind of against the cell carriers getting into the business of, you know, home ISPs. And I thought, well, maybe this is a good thing, because these ISP, these cellular companies like T-Mobile, Verizon a little less so because they do have Verizon fiber, and AT&T definitely not because they have AT&T cellular and AT&T, you know, phone lines, direct ISPs. They're more of a traditional ISP. But these new players like T-Mobile and, like I said, more or less so Verizon, maybe, just maybe, they're going to come in and offer a better customer experience or better services than these traditional ISPs have. And because, and here's the good thing, because they offer it over the air, there's no like, oh, I can only get, now sure, cell phone towers only work in a certain radius, but for the most part, if you have Verizon in some place, you're also going to be able to get T-Mobile, especially in a city. But with like traditional ISPs and cable companies, they own the lines to your house or your apartment or wherever. Maybe they made a whole deal with your apartment complex. And so you're stuck with this. And so they can be as shit and as mean and annoying and harassing to you over the phone. And even when you try to cancel, like they're like, oh, well, what are you using it for? Why are you trying to cancel? Let me sell you this stuff, because they know that they just drag their feet over the years and they offer terrible customer service. So the only thing they can do is have hostile interactions with their customers to try to keep them on their plans. So maybe, just maybe, and I'm looking at the, you know, the silver lining here, that T-Mobile and some of these cell companies coming into this space will create competition that gets these traditional ISPs offering better services, better customer service, and a better experience than they do now. Because right now, they just got us bent over the barrel.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because, and that is just some good silver lining. Because now you're with over the air, you can't have a geographical monopoly. And previously, these carriers were legal geographic monopolies because of the lines. They owned the lines. Therefore, they could be the only ones in town, and legally you couldn't do anything about it. It was absolutely, positively, 100% okay by the government standards because of that geographical monopoly. It's changed over time in larger cities and where other providers have come in, or they've leased lines from some of the owners or run their own. But yeah, you're right. Now that it's over the air, that competition opens up a lot more. And so let's hope so. I don't know, because Google couldn't figure it out how to do it. And I see them as someone, as a company that, you know, typically leads the way on some of these things, and they couldn't do it. So I don't know. Someone's got a good solution to solving the competition and just quality. That'd be good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just really mad about this, but,
it's okay.
Like while you were talking, I was just thinking about the data caps and things like that. It's like if, a private company, it's like if Ford owned the road outside of your house. And so if you drove out of your driveway too many times in a month, then you would start having to pay a toll. Like it makes no sense. I mean, that's a little bit of a stretch, but it's pretty close enough. I'm gonna go with it.
I'd say Ryan's emotionally compromised right now.
I think so.
I'm always emotionally compromised.
You drink, buddy.
Well, the thing is my monster is kicking in. So now like the rage from that support, that sales call earlier is just built up all day. So
I got to say,
here we are.
First of all, I love the audacity of the person. And you know that they picked today to call so that you would answer thinking, oh, they're just trying to confirm my appointment or something, right? I love it.
Yeah. Call me like in the middle of the day, like while I'm working, like, you know, I don't call you and, you know, ask you about your phone bill while you're working, calling other people, harassing them at their house.
Yeah. I mean, like, we've done sales before, you know, and I can respect what they're doing because you got to do what you have to do, whether you love it or you don't love it. But it does kind of suck because sometimes you wish you could just give them the easy button, like, hey, you know what? I'm not trying to be egotistical here, but I am tech savvy and I know exactly what I want and I know that I'm okay. I appreciate what you have to offer. Now let's just seal the deal here and talk to you later.
That was the thing, like you and I, you know, and even Ryan, I think we've all worked retail and we've worked in, you know, big box stores where you're pressured to make certain sales and add-ons and all this stuff. But I mean, if I, at least in my like sales history, if a person tells me, hey, I like just looks me in the eye and says, hey, like, I know you have to make a, you have to tell me this stuff. And I understand that. And I'm telling you, no, like I, at that point I'm like, okay. Like, but this person like knew no shame and maybe they're the best salesman that Spectrum has. And she pisses everybody off that she talks to. But I mean, I don't know. It didn't do anything for their brand. I'll tell you that because I'm bad mouthing them on our podcast right now and whoever listens to this will hear it. So I hope it was worth it. I'm done.
He's okay. Everybody.
That vein is getting a little bit bigger on your skin.
Yeah. So moving on to, something else I'm upset about. This is, the episode where Ryan's upset about things, but I think that might be a lot of episodes, but anyway, yeah, so Logitech came out the other day with a press release. I think it was like late last Friday. It's where you put the press releases you want to bury. And they're going to be discontinuing their Harmony remote controls, which if you've ever had any kind of like home entertainment system, you know, where you had surround sound or a TV and some kind of media player, DVD player, streaming boxes nowadays, you've to kind of simplify things so you didn't have like five different remotes you were trying to juggle, you typically would get a Logitech universal remote. And so I'm kind of disappointed that they're canning this line because universal remotes aren't great, but Harmony was the least worst out of all of them. And I still think that there is a place for these remotes. Yeah, and so it just sucks. I know like a lot of the counter arguments that I've seen for why this is fine is that like HDMI CEC you know can go ahead and turn on your TV when you hit the remote on your streaming box and things like that, and that's true. And to be honest, that's what I use right now. But with the universal remotes, you could, you know, be watching TV and then hit one button and then switch the input on your, switch the input on your surround sound system and then maybe turn on your PlayStation, turn off your Apple TV, and then you were good to go. You know, you had everything set up exactly the way that you wanted it. And it was nice for families too, where people might be confused about like, oh no, you've got to take the surround sound remote, switch the input on that, but then make sure that you turn off this other thing on this other remote and then switch this thing on. Or, oh no, you picked up the wrong remote. You can't turn the volume up with that remote. You have to turn the volume up with this remote. You just grab the one remote and you were good to go. So I think we're going to lose that.
I couldn't tell if you were getting angry.
Oh no, I got that all out. I'm good now. I'm sad now. I'm at the other phase of loss.
Sadness. Oh.
Anyway, yeah, I think it's interesting that it's always the flop whenever you're on the couch and your sound bar or sound system happens to be a different remote than what you're trying to accomplish with your TV, which kind of sucks too, because sometimes you have to make sure you pick a sound bar or something that matches the brand of your TV so it integrates properly, far as with remotes and strictly on remotes. But I do see this as something as, and I totally feel and understand what you're saying on it, Ryan, but I could see this being more just an integrated app to control everything for you on your phone because I myself am getting further and further into with Samsung TVs where I just use the SmartThings app to control my TV. I don't even, you know, get to the point where I don't touch my TV, my physical remote as much anymore. So, I mean, they have just a lot of gravity going against them on what they were doing with this remote. So I could see it coming to a point where they're like, well, maybe it's not worth developing the controller as much anymore.
See, my counterpoint to that is like a great remote is a remote that you can use without looking at it. So if you're watching TV, you're watching a movie, you can hit the mute button or you can hit the pause button and you don't have to take your eyes off of it. Or if you just want to turn the volume up like one tick, because it's just not loud enough, but you don't want to miss what's happening. Whereas like if you had an app, like you're saying, then you've got to like pull your phone out, look at your phone. If it's locked, you've got to unlock it. So you're either using your face, your thumb, or your password. And then you've got to go to the app. Then you got to open the app. Then you got to find the button that you're looking for that does the one thing that you want it to do. It's just not convenient. And my surround sound system has an app that lets you like do certain things. And I never use it because it's hot junk. It's just garbage. So, I mean, in theory, yes, it could be replaced with an app, especially for functionality that you're not going to use all the time. Like maybe you open the app just to set everything up and then you're good to go. But I mean, if you want an app or if you want a remote where it's just like a sheet of glass and no buttons, then you need to use the Apple TV. Because then every time you pick it up, it like fast forwards and rewinds on you because it's touch based and it's actually pretty terrible. Rumor is they're supposed to be redoing it. But yeah, it's a big trade off. I just like tactility. I think we could like pivot this conversation to interactions in cars and how like cars are slowly adding more touch based features. And I think that sucks too, because then it has to take your attention off the road. I know like I have a Focus, but the Ford Edges, they all have like touch interface and they look like they're buttons, but they're just like basically an image of a button on like capacitive plastic. And it's terrible because like I'm accidentally like I'll brush against something and then it kicks off. And anyways. Yeah, I'm rambling. I had a monster.
I will say, I haven't thought about a Harmony remote since we sold them when I worked at Best Buy. Like, and I just looked this up and I was like, man, when did the first one come out? And it's been 20 years that they've had these out. And so it is a little weird to me, but it also kind of makes sense because, I mean, if I haven't thought about it because I'm so great. I'm just kidding. That's stupid. Cut that out. No, but like I haven't thought about it, so I'm sure a lot of people haven't. And with most smart TVs, like, you know, a lot of people and the advent and prevalence of soundbars, everyone just does that. They're not doing like the whole, for the most part, again, I know, audiophiles, whatever, will probably try to spear me for this, but they don't have a receiver and a surround sound system. You know, a majority of people are probably a soundbar and a sub, and the one remote controls everything that comes with everything. And so they're not worried about it. I do agree that I like a tactile remote though. And so as things, you know, shift to apps, it's a little frustrating. And so I will have my two remotes that I do now, and I will be happy, and children will hate me, and I'll be a curmudgeon, and it's fine.
Yeah, so I guess just to close it out, I personally, I think the big issue with Harmony is that they weren't always like spectacular, and I don't know if they could be just by the limitations of the technology. Just because they're like IR blasting codes out everywhere. But I feel like we're worse off if we don't have that option. Sure, if you have a sound bar, you don't need one. If you just have a regular TV and a streaming box hooked up to it, you don't need one. But there are cases where I feel like it could make the experience better. Like I have a surround sound system hooked up, and my Apple TV is hooked up. And if I like want to play my Switch that's hooked up to that as well, I can't do any magic CEC stuff to like switch over to my Nintendo. I have to switch it over onto the surround sound system, and that changes the input because everything goes through there. But then I have to like go grab the Switch and remote and then turn it on and to get everything set up. Where if I just had the universal remote, I could just have the one remote instead of having my Apple TV remote, my TV remote, my surround sound remote, and then eventually my Switch controller. I could be down to the controller in one remote, and that would be nicer for me. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on into more ways that we're screwing up the world, maybe. Yeah, we've got an article about GMO mosquitoes. Adam, do you want to tell us about this?
Yeah, we're putting lasers on mosquitoes, and whenever we release them out, it's going to be like a small army that'll take over like Florida. And whenever they do this, I think they're targeting old people. I don't know.
They're going to control the cats.
This is why 5G is everywhere now.
I got 5G in my arm.
Me too. I think all three of us do now, so we're good.
Yeah.
Upgraded. Now, so they're looking at, I'm trying to think of what the actual disease is they're trying to fight.
It's probably West Nile and Zika.
Yeah, it's Zika. Yes. Yeah, they're mainly trying to go after Zika, and their idea is that they've genetically modified these mosquitoes to kind of go out and even plane that gene field of removing that disease altogether. The thing that I feel that's weird, well, first off, they don't have an approval for it yet, from my understanding. And they're trying to get this to go through because they also see that this is just a staircase to we get this out, we can reduce the play field on this scenario, but we also prove that it's something that can be done so we can move forward with other things to resolve based on this type of resolution. Now, what's interesting, because they're talking mainly about Florida doing this, and I wonder how you can control that to a level that doesn't, you know, what if it becomes a problem? What if, like, after breeding or anything, I mean, we all know that like life is interesting and does things that we don't expect sometimes. So if you create something, you put it out in the wild, maybe it mutates, but then it doesn't just stick with Florida. It makes its way out to other areas, how that messes with the food chain. I don't know. I think that's stuff that's very, I hate saying dangerous because it's almost kind of like alarmist, but it does seem like there's some pretty big risks.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. It's kind of, I don't think it's alarmist. It's more of like a Pandora's box type thing, right? So, you know, they can make these changes and modify these mosquitoes so that they can't breed. But how does that, and sure, that helps us with, that helps us with Zika and all these other diseases. But like, how does that affect the food chain, right? Like everything is connected in the world. And we're only kind of now seeing how humans affecting nature causes drastic worldwide changes. And I hate mosquitoes. I hate them. I think I hate them more than the Spectrum salesperson that called me. Because I mean, they just don't do anything good for anybody. They're food for bats, but like for, and birds, but for, you know, people, they're just, They're just terrible. And so I would love for them to be wiped out. But like Adam was saying, I have a little bit of hesitancy in genetically modifying them to change the balance of the ecosystem. I just wonder if they have done like models or studies of the food chain and how this would affect the ecology, because it's not going to just be in Florida. Like when they release these, you know, they're going to slowly spread. So I don't know. I am not for this, even though I hate mosquitoes and the diseases that they carry. I would be more apt if we just were able to develop some kind of vaccine or something in humans that could prevent Zika from having an effect on us, as opposed to changing a whole entire species that gets eaten by other species, and we're going to make sure that they just can't breed anymore. I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing, and maybe it makes me more concerned too, because they're like, this is kind of a staircase, right? Like, hey, we're going to do this first, and this may give us opportunity to do a little bit more in the same play field. And yeah, I think we're probably being a little arrogant by assuming we know what the results are going to be down the road on this. I mean, computers, sure, we can see big picture on a lot of that because there's a logical, and maybe I'm undermining people that are specialists in this field, but I feel like when it comes to organics, sometimes this is very, unpredictable.
Yeah, I mean, even with computers, we've all seen Terminator. We know how it ends.
Well, do we really know how it ends? Because it kind of like goes back and forth, and it's kind of like never ending.
Depends on who the director is.
Yeah, that's true. So, in other fun notes, how we like to talk about this new season, this new show, Falcon and Winter Soldier, EP4.
This episode was amazing.
Yeah, it was definitely the best.
Yeah, this episode was good. I'm trying to think like how to. Yeah, like I loved the action. I loved the story that I saw coming. I just want to say I knew it was coming, and I have not read the comics. So the end part was probably my favorite, but also my least favorite. Where motherfreaker, I knew it. He took that juice, and Mr. Cap became a super soldier, and then freaking raged out on somebody. Which I mean, to his, I guess, you know, his buddy did just die, so I get that, but I totally knew that was coming, and I have not read any of the old comics. And Ryan, I'm sure you'll go into some of that, but so I had no idea that like that was part of his like storyline. But I just had that feeling, like not only are we not supposed to like this guy, but he's gonna do something. And I even remember I said, because I thought he had already done taken the serum like way back, and I had missed it, and. But then he did take it, and I was like, I literally yelled out loud, I knew it when I was watching it. I was like, I knew it was going to happen. And then he killed it. And I was like, whoa, okay. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense, and I like where it's going. With only, what, 2 episodes left, it's going to be interesting to see how they wrap it up. I'm sure they won't wrap it up, let's be honest. They'll probably leave it open so that they can expand it. But yeah, there's some really cool moments. From this last episode, gosh, I forget her name from Wakanda, the guards that came in.
Yeah.
That was such a,
I can't,
dude, that scene where she literally disarmed Bucky. Like, that
yeah,
so
she
awesome.
Did literally disarm him.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Stuff was so cool. Like, it was just a really like fun episode, that also had, you know, just that piece of like really opening up where, that, a new Cap character, wherever that's going.
All right. It's actually kind of nice having someone sitting here. I can just look over and cue this. But no, I really enjoyed this episode, but I also grieved this episode in a way, because I liked the connections that were happening with Sam, with Carly, right?
Yeah, Carly Morgenthau. Because in the comics, it's actually Carl Morgenthau. It's a man.
Okay. So I liked what was going on there, and it really irritated the hell out of me. Walker running in there, interrupting what was going on. They're raising the stakes by putting Sarah and stuff in the mix with her kids. And there was just a lot of things that happened that I was just like, whoa, where are we going with this? And of course, like, Zemo instantly hopscopping on all those serums, which I was like, go, yeah, do it, man, destroy all of them, like, they don't need to be there. And of course he had to leave one, and I knew as soon as he seen that damn thing laying on the floor, he's like, this is it, this is getting ready to happen. But we definitely seen the pivot of his character. Like, this was the all in all for him to just go on all out. But it made me super sad, and I've never, like, I'm not a huge Captain America fan, I'm going to be honest. Like, I like Chris Evans playing Steve Rogers, and I like what they did with him in the MCU. However, was I ever the person that was like, hey, I'm going to go buy a Captain America t-shirt, whatever? No, not really. But from what all has happened in this season, and exclusively that moment where he beats the crap out of this dude with the shield and executes him in the middle with everybody got their phones out, I appreciated and missed Steve Rogers the most. Because the last time he did that move, was when he was beating the crap out of Tony Stark to help save Bucky, but then threw the shield down instead of, hey, I'm going to kill you. You know, I think he wedged it into his chest and knocked out the core, but still, he didn't execute Tony. You think you could get that emotion out of him, but he knew better. He knew his limits. So it's just really sad, because in a way it is a representation of America. Everyone is looking to this person. That shield means way more than that guy holding the shield.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, like, interesting things to say about this. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure, like, this is a little much, but I'm pretty sure he, like, decapitated the guy. But, like, the, you know, of course they didn't show it, because he's taking the edge of the shield and, like, just jabbing it down, like, pretty much on his head. And then as he brings the shield up, you see the blood, and it's almost like blood on the American flag. And so the symbolism there was really interesting to me, in kind of like a commentary of, you know, maybe I'm just like way into metaphors and reading into this, but it's kind of a commentary of like, okay, so Captain America, he is our idealistic historical views of America in World War II, fighting, you know, good. There was no gray area. We were good, and the Nazis were bad. And now we've got this new Captain America who was in Afghanistan, and he talked about some of the things that he got his medals for. And, you know, he didn't feel like he should have gotten medals for him. It was basically like them trying to tell him, like, you did some bad things, and you did them for us, and so here's our appreciation. And that was manifested in the blood on the shield that he carried. And so I got that out of it, which I appreciated.
His demeanor too. I think that was another big thing, was after he did it and he put that shield on, they didn't make him look like he had a self-realization moment, like, oh, I just did that. Instead, he kind of looked like, well, you know, this is what you're going to get, you know? I think that was what really kind of got me.
Yeah, in Hoskins, his partner who died, which was interesting because Hoskins is Battlestar. He did make a mention of that name like once or twice. And it's just kind of interesting that they decided to kill him, because he's... I don't know like how prominent he is, but he's a, you know, ongoing character in the comics, at least to a point. But anyway, him and is it Kyle Walker? What's his name?
Is it John?
John Walker. Yeah. Yeah. So he, you know, before this happened, they were having a conversation, about, oh, should I, you know, would you take the serum? And Hoskins was like, well, heck yeah, I would. And, I believe Hoskins said that, that the serum like basically enhances who you are. Right. So if you're a good moral person, AKA Steve Rogers, you're going to continue to be a super good moral person where other people with the serum have been corrupted in whatever ways. And that played out, right? We saw that with John Walker where, you know, he had all these insecurities where he's trying to live up to Steve Rogers. But he's also done some bad things in service of his country. At least that's the way they explained it. So he, you know, he's, done morally wrong things, where, you know, I would guess like Steve Rogers would say, like, I'm not going to do that. That's not who we are. Right. And so we saw that play out when he takes the serum and he gets so mad that Hoskins died, who I want to point out the guy that he bludgeoned to death with the shield was not the one who did it. Right. Carly Morgenthau, was the one who killed Hoskins accidentally, but I mean, cause she didn't like try to kill him. I think that was kind of obvious at least.
Yeah. She was defending herself and
yeah. Well, you know, she kicked him and they were all sparring and fighting and stuff. And he was, you know, he was killed. He was basically the only non super soldier there. Right. And so he, I guess, you know, I guess Sam Wilson's, yeah, so I guess Sam wasn't. But anyway, yeah, she accidentally killed him and then she got away. And so he just basically killed him because he was mad, right? There was no justification for that. Where even if he had caught her and killed her, that's not right. But at least there was like some sort of like tangible justification that like, oh, she's the one that did it. But instead he killed an innocent person basically. Because when they had been doing all these bomb plots and all these like terrible things, killing people, I believe that guy was the one that said like, hey, are you sure you want to be doing this? Like, I don't feel like this is right. And so he was kind of, I mean, the most innocent of the characters that they showed us.
I think you're right. I think he's more of the stick to the mission that they had originally, which was, hey, we're just trying to take care of our own, right? And help out people because the governments aren't helping them. They're stockpiling, you know, supplies and that kind of thing. And then, you know, John just raged out, decided to pick him out just because, you know, that was, like you said, I think he's very much a ends justify the means type, you know, person. In like deep down, and that's exactly what comes out, like we were saying, the serum, if that's what it enhances, then he doesn't care, because anyone who's associated with the enemy, you know, the very much even working alongside of them with the original goal, like that doesn't matter. Like, you are the enemy, therefore I must destroy you.
I mean, the dude put his arms up and surrender before he was executed, and that's generally for sure. He should have imprisoned him instead of doing what he did. But
yeah. And so with that said, I have, like Ryan said, I have been kind of reading the older Captain America comics. I went back and was actually, when this happened, I was like, I want to know more about this character, because it seems like this is a huge moment. And I kind of have a feeling that maybe he's going to be in some movies, and they're going to like raise the elevation of his character, because he is like Kurt Russell's son. So like, he's not like necessarily like a kind of a nobody actor. But you know, that doesn't really mean anything, but it's just kind of postulating. But the character itself, so he is John Walker. Originally, he was introduced into the comics as the Super Patriot in the 80s. And the Super Patriot was basically like this really like brash and confident guy who didn't have super serum as far as I know, but was like super strong, and Captain America never really beat him when they first fought each other. It was basically a stalemate, and he's kind of like the younger, like more like modern guy. And he says like Captain America is too old. He's out of touch with what the real America is and what they need. And so he basically has like this big PR campaign where he's like staging media events to get popularity. He basically just wants to be popular. And we kind of saw that with John Walker when he's at the stadium, when they first introduced him as Captain America. One thing of note that kind of will give you an idea of what this character was supposed to be: in the comic where he's first introduced, he's in like a limo or something with his agent, and they're like, oh, there's a lady getting mugged over there. And he's like, oh, that'll never make the news. That's not worth my time. And they just drive on by. Right. So he's in it for the recognition at least. And eventually, and I haven't gotten into these, but eventually, Super Patriot becomes Captain America, right? In the comics. And then eventually he's actually on the Avengers as Captain America at one point, and then gets a new role where he's called the US agent. And I think he's when he's in that title or superhero name or whatever you want to call it, he I think he's the leader of S.W.O.R.D. So I kind of wonder if they're going to pivot him and maybe have some kind of redemption story for him where this is his low point, right? Because, I mean, we think about Bucky. Like, Bucky did some terrible things, right? And, like, you know, he's the good guy in this, right? So I think eventually we can have where John Walker has like some kind of redemption story. He might always have like a chip on his shoulder and might not always do, like, his character might not always do the right thing, and that's what keeps his character engaging. But I don't think he's gonna always be the bad guy. But I think right now this is his low point and where he's the bad guy. Real quick, I thought it was kind of funny in the comic that I read, the first one where he's introduced, Hoskins is actually in his crew, and he's got like these cronies that dress up as Captain America, and they're called the Buckies. They go around and cause trouble as like dressed up as Captain America to like smear Captain America's name. And then the Super Patriot goes around and like does good things and tries to make his image better than Captain America's and things like that. There's more interaction, but I haven't gotten that far into their interactions in the comics. But I thought it was interesting that Hoskins was there from the get-go.
Yeah, I think at this point, Agent Carter's starting to be a little sus.
No, I don't think so. I think she's just trying to survive there in Madripoor. Maybe there's like some kind of weird thing going on with her and the Power Broker. I'm wondering if we're going to see more of the Power Broker, because that's a big character in the comics as well. I mean, she helped them out. She didn't do anything that I saw that was bad. She's just kind of mad because she got hung out to dry when she stuck her neck out and the rest of them got pardons. And so she's just doing what she can do to try not to get like thrown in jail forever.
Yeah. Got my eye on her. Something seems a little off.
I'll say I did like the little throwback. So they've had a couple old school like fantasy series throwbacks and mentions with the Gandalf and everything around Lord of the Rings earlier on. And then there was a little throwback to Narnia in this episode with Zemo.
Really?
Yeah. Zemo and the Turkish Delight with the kid, using the Turkish Delight to get information. And that's what the White Witch uses with Edmund.
Are they Turkish Delights? Is that what they called them in?
Yeah.
Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so I think, which could, if you dig real deep, and I think there might be something to this, typically it would be used as someone who you can't trust, right? Like as a device in a story where, hey, this thing is a repeated pattern in, you know, previous fantasy novels. So it's kind of like tying together, like, hey, this person is using a little trickery to get what they want. So how much can we trust him? And what are his, like, true motives? And I think, yep, destroying the serum, good. However, you know, there might be some other pieces there. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It.
Yeah, you definitely can't trust Zemo.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to kill every single one of the people that he's working with right now. Like, Falcon, Winter Soldier, everybody. He wants them all dead. And he's an opportunistic and sneaky person or character. So yeah, you can't trust him at all.
Wonder what it would be like with phase one Loki and Zemo together.
I don't know. That would be kind of weird. He's more of like elaborate planned base than tricky.
Yeah. Loki's pretty sporadic.
Yeah, he's mischievous again. God of mischief, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait till the next episode, I guess, comes out tomorrow. So, really interested to see what happens here. I wonder if Walker's going to get away, or if... Because Bucky and Sam were right there. So, I wonder if they're... It seems hard that they're going to tie up all these threads, right? Because Carly is like going everywhere with the Flag Smashers, where in the comics, the Flag Smasher is one person named Carl Morgenthau, but they've decided to make it a movement. He is a anti-nationalist character, just like they are, where they don't want nations. They want everything to be unified. I don't know his motivations in the comic versus their motivations are more... They seem to be come from a better place. I wonder how they're going to tie that thread up in two episodes. I mean, I guess that's basically the length of a movie, so I guess they could. But yeah, that and the fact that I think they're going to have to take Walker in at this point.
Yeah, I think it'll get spun, though, like what he did. I think the government will somehow spin it. That's my feeling because of, again, going to and justifying means not only in him, but also the U.S. government. And if this is truly a look at a lot of how people view the U.S. government today, even.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
They were all like filming with their cameras. So
fake news. Really... It's deep fakes, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Actually, there was a lot of. I wonder if I'm just kind of like making patterns where they don't exist or if they did pull from the source material, but the whole, and I didn't read this one cause I just jumped into where John Walker was introduced in the first issue with the Super Patriot. But the big thing that happened apparently right before that episode is that Captain America actually did kill somebody. He killed a terrorist in the comics. And that was like a big, big deal because, you know, he'd never raised his shield to anybody or whatever, you know, he never killed anybody, but he was put in a situation where he had to. And then we kind of see that morphed into, and that was like a big media deal, right? Like nobody liked Captain America or trusted him. Because he, you know, killed somebody, right? That was the thread in the comics. And now we're seeing that in the show where everybody saw John Walker kill a terrorist, but he didn't do it because he had to, you know what I mean? Where in the comics, Captain America had to, or at least that's the way they explained it. And John Walker just killed him because he was mad. So there's kind of like a reflection there with the comics. So I wonder if they're going to build on that thread anymore, if it's just kind of like a tongue in cheek, like, hey, you read the comics, here's a little bit of extra for you, you know, this acknowledgement. So, but yep. So anyway, I think that wraps it up for Falcon and Winter Soldier. And we've gone pretty long today, but we did promise that we were going to get to the media club. So I think we're going to start that. We're going to do the Media Club Eternals, book by Neil Gaiman, 7 issues, I believe. And it talks about the origins of the Eternals, who they are, who their enemies are, how they were created. And the reason that I wanted us to read this and kind of talk about it is that the Eternals movie is going to be coming out. I'm not sure when, but it's in their future lineup for the next couple of years. And I knew nothing about the Eternals. And so I actually enjoyed this book. I thought it was a good read, not too long, about 200 total pages. If you read all 7 issues. And I mean, I'm just going to, I guess, say the gist of who they are and like kind of the story, and then we can, I guess, dive into more discussions there. But just to sum it up, the Eternals are a race or a humanoid type species that was created by the Celestials, which are giant robotic godlike creatures that move from planet to planet. And they just kind of, I think they moved from planet to planet for like food, right? Then they create the creatures and then they come back to eat them at like a harvest. I forget what they call that, that harvest time or whatever, but they created the Eternals, and then they created the Deviants. Is that what they're called?
I think they created the Caveman first, and then they created the Deviant offspring. And the Deviants were all kind of like the leftover sets. They were all unique blank slabs. There was nothing about them that was identifiable between one another.
Yeah, each deviant is unique. And the deviants don't live forever like the Eternals do. The Eternals cannot die. Well, they cannot be dead forever, I guess. So when they die, they basically wake up in like a rejuvenation chamber and come back. And I think they struggle with their memory during that. But it basically, the book explains like who they are, in that kind of origin, and then they have a battle between some of the deviants that are trying to bring back one of the Celestials, and that Celestial is the one that created the deviants, I believe, right?
Well, they had a war, so the deviants become very intelligent, like the human race, basically. And they get to the point where they start doing like experiments on the Eternals themselves, and they're trying to figure out what kind of makes them tick. And it gets to the point where it gets out of hand. So one of all the Celestials show up, and they basically start just wiping out the Deviants altogether because the Eternals called for help. They're like, hey, we can't handle all of them by ourselves. There's too many. So they have them come in. Well, the Celestials basically just start eating the Deviants. And there's one Celestial, it's like, this isn't right. We shouldn't do this. And then they lock him away on Earth. And that's where some of the story you're going into.
That's right. Thanks for correcting me. And like I said, it's been a bit since I read it. So yeah, I really liked the story. Thought it was interesting. What were your all's thoughts?
Okay. I was going to say, I liked the... looking at the origin of humans and humanoids being dropped on the planet. I think that's very much, and I think it, we're a little bit into this where like Jack Kirby got the idea from, there was like a book around, I think it was what, the 30s or 40s that you know, was like a theory that that's how, you know, life began on Earth, was aliens dropped us off. And there's been, you know, many sci-fi tale told around that. L. Ron Hubbard had a lot of things with that. So I thought we won't go into that. So it was interesting to see like a little bit different of a take on that, with then including these Eternals that are here to, you know, protect things and keep things going. And then there's also this other force, these deviants that are there. I thought just like the origin of things is interesting. And then to see how things kind of play, like, you know, they brought in Iron Man and a few other heroes, and you're like, it's neat how they kind of like put these types together, especially because like Iron Man didn't know who the heck these things were, and the Celestial, and they're like, what is this thing? You know, it's like really interesting that even the superheroes didn't know who any of these people were. Well, people I use loosely, I guess, and didn't have any knowledge of them until this event, which again, with memory issues too, like some of them didn't even know because of the kid. What was his name?
Sprite.
Yep. Sprite. He's a character that for whatever reason, they decided to keep him young for eternity. And because of that, he got real pissed off and
he's horny dude.
Yeah, exactly. Like he just, you know, could never get with the ladies. And that's pretty powerful. You know, if you make someone eternally a virgin, they're going to do some crazy stuff. And so 30 years before or whatever it was, he decided to, you know, force the Eternals to lose memory and forget who they were.
Yeah, I thought Sprite's character was kind of interesting. He reminded me of Cypher from The Matrix, where he betrayed them, right? And just so that he could get what he wanted. Like, he basically wanted to be human, where Cypher wanted to be back in The Matrix. He wanted to be normal, right? I think he saw the error of his ways at the end there when the deviants were... getting a little crazy with the sleeping Celestial.
Yeah, I think it was some of the stuff was interesting, like seeing Mr. Fantastic on the TV and things like that. Ultimately, this whole overarching story, granted, this is one origins, who knows what they'll do with the movies, but you start thinking like, how does this fit into the MCU cinematic universe? But then you also look at the story and how many different things happened and different spider webs happened from the story, because there was a moment where Druig went off and did his thing. So he's being a turd. You've got the hordes coming. You've got the Celestial is basically standing by saying, hey, I'm going to judge your planet. And whenever I'm ready, I'll either destroy it or leave you be, or raise you to a higher level, I should say. And then you've got the leftover deviants that still have their issues. And then you've got, there's a moment where Galactus and the Watcher both are like, ah, crap. So you know Galactus is going to show up, and that's going to be a problem, because he's basically another Celestial. It's like, we got to deal with this. This ain't happening. So it's just very interesting, because they really did spiderweb out a lot of more story arcs going on here. And to me, granted, we don't know because Loki's not out yet, but if you see the newest trailer and they talk about all this time correcting and the timekeepers, I feel like this is where this is going to connect maybe these Eternals at some layer, or where we're going with some of this. But Galactus is a big piece. I wholeheartedly think that somewhere in the MCU he's going to be something that's going to be brought up.
Yeah, I could definitely see the stuff with Loki and the time adjustments, or what'd you call them?
Timekeepers.
Timekeepers, yeah. That could definitely be playing in. And just the whole idea that, like, the some of them are able to travel through time and through the multiverse. Like, there's all of those, like you're saying, spider webs. Like, who knows how... Because it's infinite possibilities at that point, and that's how they build this stuff, is so that they can kind of craft the story that they want, and, you know, you can add new things in here and there, and you're still within, you know, canon, because, hey, look, there's this new piece that we never knew about, that we just discovered, because the multiverse, you know, and that's what's cool about it, because you can have this ever-expanding universe of characters and see how they fit together, and maybe... This is just one piece of the multiverse, of how, you know, this part of it, you know, took place. And there's all of these other variations of that. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how and if that's how they tie it together.
Well, and it's sad to see, and this is just on my personal bias of growing up with them, but it is sad to see the Avengers, those characters being so much more undermined, they're kind of worthless realistically as you're going through the story. They don't have a clue and they're nothing that's going to really get in the way of the Eternals. Like, they're going to do what they're going to do and they're more powerful than them. So, hey, see you later. That part does suck. And I wonder how that will fit with the movies. I assume they're going to have like the Superman effect where, you know, yeah, he is super powerful, but there's gotta be a way to kind of lower that playground. But there's another part to that, though, with the superheroes. Oh, man, now it's gone. Because there's something else specific with that, and I can't think of it.
Think about it. Yeah, so I think that the... So first of all, I looked it up, and Galactus actually isn't a celestial. He is a cosmic being, just kind of like the Watchers are. So like power level wise, he's pretty, you know, close with Celestials. It looks like there's some stories where he has defeated the Celestials. I'm just on Celestial Wikipedia basically, but it'd be interesting to read more about the Eternals, just to like see some of these other storylines. And I wonder if there are things that happen in like events and not just like isolated into their own books. But anyway, I think what I was going to say is, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the like this next phase of the MCU supposed to be more of like the cosmic beings and things like that? So I think what we're going to see is you're not going to have an adjustment of power level like oh, Spider-Man versus Galactus or whatever, or the Celestials. They're just not going to be involved, right? So they're going to be like kind of the guardians of Earth on Earth. And then I think that we're going to have the Eternals and, you know, maybe Galactus in here and some other, what's her name's? Guardians of the Galaxy, even though they're not really, like, you know, super powerful. Maybe, you know, they've got to steal something that somebody needs or, you know, whatever. I think that we're going to see the more cosmic superheroes get more time. And just like, you know, in some of the other movies where they're like, well, where's Tony Stark? Why can't he do this or whatever? They're like, oh, he's busy. So like, they're just gonna like basically write him out, so we don't have to see that interaction where they would just be like, they would look impotent.
Yeah, it'll be cool to see like this new phase with that whole, because you have, you know, the Scarlet Witch, you have Doctor Strange, like able to, you know, interact in a different plane, I guess you could say. And with a lot of those cosmic forces, it'll be different, but very cool, I think. And like I said, you know, back to the whole multiverse idea, all the storylines that can come from that.
I don't remember what I called it earlier, but when the Celestials come and basically come to Earth, those are called hosts. That was the word I was looking for earlier. And so maybe the interaction that we'll see in the movies, like, you know, if you wanted to see some of the superheroes that we've seen now, maybe the Celestials will come and, you know, create experiments or do things and, like, maybe create the Deviants or things like them that are more less like overpowered cosmic creatures and more like, you know, regular superheroes that we've seen before, so that the, you know, the Avengers can fight them right on Earth while the Eternals are doing something, you know, off somewhere else trying to, you know, defeat the Celestials or whatever.
Yeah, it appears that the Eternals was originally, I think this may have shifted now, but Eternals is supposed to come out this year, and Doctor Strange's in the Multiverse of Madness is the last one out of this Phase 4 that's supposed to happen.
Oh, so and that's slated for the end of the year. So I'm wondering if Eternals is going to slot in between.
So it's in, according to IMDb, it's in post-production, and it's expected November 5th of this year.
So it'll be 2021. It'll be right before Doctor Strange then, because I think that's December, if I remember correctly.
It's March 25th of 2022.
Oh, it's next year. Oh, okay. Okay.
And there are apparently storylines. I'm on the Celestials Wikipedia, and I don't know enough about this, but there are multiverse storylines regarding the Celestials. So I imagine that we're going to see some stuff pulled from there. Like, there's the end of the seventh multiverse and the birth of the eighth multiverse. And those are during different hosts. Here's some Guardians of the Galaxy stuff. So I think basically if you go to the Celestials Wikipedia, you'll get the new, all the game plan for the new movies. Pretty interesting.
Oh, was Nowhere one of the skulls of the Celestials?
Yep. Base of a severed head of a Celestial floating in an area known as the Rip. Guardians of the Galaxy, go get that. So I expect we'll see that in the new movie. And that is right before something called X-Termination, which looks like it involves X-Men characters, so we won't see that. And we'll go ahead and skip to the end of the seventh multiverse during Time Runs Out. The Beyonders are revealed to have killed all the Celestials in each reality across the multiverse to perform an experiment by destroying the seventh multiverse. Oh, and then the birth of the eighth multiverse is reborn after Secret Wars. So there we go. That's how it all ties together.
Wow, that's interesting, and it makes you wonder where they're finally going to call quits.
Yeah, what, like with everything?
Yeah, when is the MCU Cinematic Universe actually going to just wrap up? Like, when are they going to be like, okay?
Never, because in 2018 they came out with Infinity Wars, which is when the Infinity Stones are gathered again. Loki dupes his own version of the Infinity Watch within the Soul World, stealing 6 stones belonging to the main Marvel Universe from Gamora. We can keep on going, boys. We've got decades worth of MCU left.
Dude, it's so brilliant that they went with this. They just money. It's just a money printed machine, and I love it because it's so good.
And then there's a current storyline, which this is really interesting that all of this is on the Celestials, because it seems like the Celestials are like the spinal column of the MCU, because at the very bottom of it, there's King in Black, which is actually a storyline that's going on right now. And it has to do with symbiotes from Knowles, whatever that is. I'm not sure. But yeah. So like there right now, there's a King in Black for all of the different Marvel books that are going on right now. So that's actually a storyline that is happening as we speak.
Is that the Ultimate Carnage stuff? Like part of that?
It might be. I'm not sure. I think there is a Carnage King in Black book. There's like, there's everybody who's got King in Black. Unless, am I getting those confused? Is there a DC King in Black? No. It's, yeah, it's Marvel. I'm sorry. Forget what I just said.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I do, like, because what, this is probably the longest movie series ever now, right? And
I don't know. There's, like, a crap ton of Land Before Times.
Yeah, there's at least 10 of them, I think, now.
And Brave Little Toasters and...
Hey, man, I think they only made two of those, unfortunately.
No, I mean, I just... as much as I love it, I do want to see this, them finally, you know, wrap it, like get to a point where like, this is, we finished it. We closed the book.
Not going to happen. Multiverses, buddy. It's the infinite moneymaker. Even if they run out of storylines from the comic books, which I kind of find that maybe hard to believe. They'll just start popping out like, multiverses just to do their own stories. I think that's kind of, it's a detriment, but it's also an asset to what DC is doing, where they're not really having like a connected, like overarching canon between all of their movies. It came out the other day that the Zack Snyder Justice League was the last trailer called it the Zack Snyder trilogy. So the speculation there is that like none of the other movies are going to be like going forward are going to be in any kind of continuity with any of those. And that allows them to freely experiment and try different things in different movies, like the Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix was, in my opinion, the best Joker. And Heath Ledger's Joker was amazing, but his Joker was fantastic. And it didn't tie into anything else. And I loved that movie. It is so dark and so depressing, but it is so good. And the fact that they didn't have to tie it to anything else and it just stood on its own, I think is a benefit. Now, they're not going to get as big of box office, you know, numbers as Marvel and Disney will, but they at least are able to have some creative freedom there where they're not tied to certain storylines.
Well, I mean, like for me, I'll just wrap it with me, or I'll save this last part for my part. I'll say Endgame meant a lot to me for those characters, and it took quite a bit for me to even want to watch anything after it. It felt like such a good wrap up and end to everything that was going on. And it was kind of peaceful for it to be done, to tell you the truth, as much as you want to see more. And granted, we're going through these new stories and I love it now. I'm sucked back in. I'm ready to be all on and see what happens to all this new stuff. But I really would like to feel that, hey, you know what? I finished the book. I finished the series. Let it die.
That's not the comic book way, my friend. They still have to sell another issue in a couple weeks. So, I mean, it just reminds me of like when I was a kid, you know, I would get all my action figures. We'd have some big epic battle and somebody would die. You know, it was just such a tragic thing that I would invent these stories in these big epic battles and somebody would die saving everybody or whatever. But then the next time I played, you know, somebody went back in time and saved him and he never died. And now we can have another movie. And you know, that I really feel like that's what they're going to eventually, I mean, they're not going to just be like, we're not going to make Marvel movies anymore. Like, Marvel Studios moved in with Disney. They bought them. They are making movies forever.
But, like, maybe I would have liked it more if there was some way they could have detached it completely of, like, maybe not so much in-game, but whatever their story arc they're going on, Phase 4, that it ended with all the humanistic characters and all that, they finally finish, and that anything going on from that point, kind of what you were alluding to earlier with the Eternals, is just, it's no longer involved. Their story arcs are done. The world's just over with that part, and they all can rest, and there's peace with that planet. They don't have to be involved anymore. That would be the cool part. At least, you know, you wouldn't have to watch these newer movies unless you just wanted to become reinvested in some new characters in another universe.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I guess they haven't really said what they're going to do with Phase 5. But what's interesting is if you look at Phase 4 and you talk, you know, you just kind of talk about what we just brought up. I mean, no, I take it back. They're really the only human characters that we've got is the Black Widow. But I think that's going to be basically a standalone movie, right? I don't think that really is going to tie into a huge...
There's another Ant-Man, too.
...arc. Yeah, and so you've got Shang-Chi in The Legend of the Ten Rings. I don't really... Does that have to do with Doctor Strange? Is it a new character? I don't know that. I don't know the backstory on that one. But then you've got Eternals, so that's cosmic. You've got Spider-Man, No Way Home, which they'll probably do some kind of weird sci-fi science cosmic thing there. I'm not sure.
It's bringing Carnage, so who knows where we'll go with the symbiotes.
Oh, okay, cool. So, yeah, probably some space stuff there, right? Then you've got Doctor Strange, which all bets are off with Doctor Strange. It's in the title, Multiverse of Madness. So do whatever they want there. It's probably where they're going to start creating all the different timelines in the different, you know, worlds. You got Thor. He's cosmic. Black Panther 2 is squeezed in there. I don't know how that one will fit in. You got Captain Marvel 2. She's cosmic. Ant-Man and Wasp, they're like quantum science, different dimensions. So that's pretty cosmic. Guardians of the Galaxy, cosmic. And then Fantastic Four TBA. Which is going to be like a cosmic capper right there. So, I mean, I think we're pretty much done with
What about Blade?
Well,
that's not in cosmic
here.
It's in there.
Oh,
it's
the vampire dude too. That's also coming. What's his name?
Morbius.
Yeah, Morbius.
So I'm wondering how that'd be interesting.
But here, yeah. You say that, but if you look at Phase 4, none of those are in Phase 4.
Which list are you looking at? Because the one I'm looking at does include Blade.
I'm looking at Wikipedia, which is the God's truth.
I'm looking at fandom, though. I did find that, so Blade is going to be a separate story. It's not actually part of Phase 4. It is a movie they're doing, but it'll be separate.
Right. So in this arc, is what I'm saying. Ooh, there's going to be the Thunderbolts. That's Zemo, guys. Anyway, let's wrap this up.
Well, exciting things to come, for sure. I enjoyed the comic. Can't wait to see what we choose for our next media club.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out how we decide that. I think one of you guys should pick something, whether it's a movie, a book, comic. If we want to read more... into the Celestials and all this stuff that might be interesting, or if we want to, I don't know, maybe read a different book that's going to be, you know, tangentially related to Phase 4, could be fun too. But I think you guys should pick the next one, and we'll have to figure out how we do that. But
let's do a rotation. Ryan, you go next. It'll be like Ryan, Adam.
Sounds good.
All right, so yeah, Ryan's going to pick the next one. I don't know if we'll have it next week, but we'll let you know. And I think that's going to wrap up the show. We went kind of long and rambly towards the end there. So we'll see what I can do to make it a little shorter. That's all we've got. So say goodbye, everybody.
See you, everybody.
See you all later.
Thanks for listening. Go to diversion.fm to subscribe and listen weekly in your podcast player of choice. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again, and see you next week.